Well, hey, Bruce, how you been?
Yeah, real well. Well, great to be back online and catching up with what's been going on.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been able to do one of these podcasts, so I'm anxious to get some time to chat. Always good to compare notes from different continents on how the world is changing, and specifically the world of education. There's been some interesting news headlines here today that I think we're going to talk a little bit about, or not headlines, but some stories coming out about some contexts for change and some of the work we've been doing in Change School as well around the new story that we have to tell around schools and education.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly now there seems to be even more public discussion around those topics. You know, down here, a lot of the discussion has been around we've got a budget coming up and funding for schools. But I think most people are starting to think beyond those day-to-day issues and become more focused on exactly why their kids are going to school. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, we're putting all this public money into schools, but to what extent are they preparing our young people for that world that they're going to work and live in?
And for those of you who might be joining us for the first time, just to introduce ourselves, I'm Will Richardson from here in beautiful downtown Flemington, New Jersey, and that's my friend and colleague Bruce Dixon, who's in Melbourne, Australia, and we are the co-founders of Modern Learners and also the co-founders of Change.School, and if you hear us again in 2 years, maybe the co-founders of something else, the way that we're going. It's always fun to do interesting work, though. Yeah, so let's talk about that a little bit, right? Story and how it's changing, because I agree. I think that there's a different narrative that's growing around what the purpose of schools is, what the contexts for schooling are, and how then do leaders and teachers and communities begin to craft and communicate a different reason for being, a different story that is happening in classrooms, and how do we begin to inform all those different constituencies about all those different contexts? It's a really, really interesting moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it was interesting just to reflect. You mentioned Change School, and for those people listening to this podcast, you're probably aware that we're in the middle of a Change School at the moment. We just came off an excellent discussion with some leaders across, I think, three continents. And one of them, the Canadian colleague who was on there, made comment that, you know, that we've got to be aware that not only do we have to think and tell this story, this new story about schools, because it's important that people know what we're doing, but the real challenge we have is that if we leave a vacuum, someone else is telling a very different story. And the very different story they're telling is the one that we all know, the one about, you know, the importance of test scores and league tables and national testing. And, you know, really, in many ways, I would like to think that we're starting to get over that, that people are starting to realize that is a very, very, very shallow snapshot of what schools are about, and that the discussion, the public discussion around schooling, is becoming much more focused on why school, on what is the purpose of school, what are we actually preparing our young people for. And you made mention in a recent post about a New York Times article this week, that was one of the first ones, which also linked to that Pew research, and I thought it was an astounding piece of work. I mean, they're really starting to bring together, I think, the ideas that people have around the world of work and how we have to better prepare people for that new world.
I think the basic narrative coming out of people in business and people who are trying to sort out what this looks like 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, which no one can do, by the way. No one knows exactly what this is going to look like. But it seems the kind of consensus thread is that everybody's going to have to be a learner. Everybody's going to have to just be constantly learning. And there's going to have to be a new level of self-directedness, self-determined, you know, all that type of stuff that we talk about. And, you know, when you talk about parents sensing a different narrative, I think that's part of it, that they're looking around and they see change happening so quickly. They understand that very few of the things that we've become accustomed to or that we've begun to expect from our lives, you know, pensions and healthcare and all that type of stuff is increasingly going to be difficult for our kids to get through their work. And I do think that they look at that kind of half-life of skills now and they go, holy cow, you know, I mean, just a couple of years ago, if you could do this, you were employable. And now it's like, well, that skill's pretty much vanished. And now it's a totally new ball game. So I guess I wonder, though, the extent to which it's the job of schools to build that capacity to share those times, you know, those topics. You know, you mentioned that whole Pew research that came out. I mean, is that something that we send to parents? Do we send them that and start conversations around that? Do we, you know, bring them in and say, or offer them an opportunity to come in and let's talk about how the world is shifting in those larger contexts? Or is it something that we hope that they kind of get on their own? I guess, what is our responsibility in that?
I think you raise a great question there, and I think the answer is yes, we do. Absolutely, we have to. And I think I've got to say for myself, I was either naive or unaware of, you know, maybe in our day-to-day work that you and I do, that many people listening to this podcast do, that contemporary, you know, education demands of people involved in it today, is that we hope they're much more widely read. And so they're more aware, I think, of a lot of these things. And I would suggest that, you know, a lot of parents are not as well informed about a lot of these issues. If certainly we all know if they rely on the public media, they're sure as heck not going to get much of a snapshot of any of this. They're going to get a very, very, very narrow view about what is going on in the world and how we would engage them in something like that Pew report and the New York Times article. Is a good question. I mean, it can be anything from, you know, here, read this, to a book study, to a discussion group, to an information evening, to a... But I think it should be all those things, frankly. I think that sometimes we just need to share out information that we get on a regular basis. And, you know, a bit like you and I do through Modern Learners, the newsletter that we send out every week, you know, our intent there is to curate what we see as the important news, the news that school leaders need to be aware of. And I think similarly, school leaders need to do the same with their parent community. As I say again, I personally was for a long time, up until not long ago, under the misapprehension that parents in the wider community were very aware of these changes, and they're not. The people who are those people who are at the real coalface. So if you're... you know, if you work for Google or if you work for Airbnb or whatever else, you know all about a lot of what's happening in this space. But the vast majority of people do not.
But I wonder the extent to which the people who do understand how that translates into changed classroom practice.
Very, very few, very little.
And so, you know, it does come down to, again, you know, we talk about this a lot, the why, the what, and the how. That you have to have that why context. And then you have to understand what that change looks like in order to address that context. And I think both of those are really hard. And the timing of that is really hard, right? As if you're an educational leader, if you come into a school and you understand those contexts, you just come in and set the vision then and, you know, build the capacity of people then to kind of embrace that vision? Or do you do that capacity building first, bring parents in, teachers? Do you spend time talking about these types of articles, talking about the other one, you know, we were just discussing before, this is the one in the New Yorker that just came out on the gig economy and how different that looks. I mean, you know, do we do that before we come up with a vision? Do we do it after? Is it a constant kind of upskilling or understanding of, you know, helping parents and community members understand all this stuff? It's really complex. And I think that what we need to do in order to make change happen, I think you and I both would agree this, and this is based on the schools that we've worked with and the stories that we hear all over the place. I think that what has to happen is for change to be sustainable, it has to be grounded in some understanding of that larger context.
Absolutely.
But the other piece of it is that parents who may understand that context, but don't yet understand what it looks like, have to have a very high level of trust in the people who are making then the decisions around change. And so it's, you know, there's all these kinds of different interactions and angles that come at it that really require us now to have transparent, deep relationships in terms of intellectual relationships with parents on, you know, why and what and how we're going to get there together.
Well, I think what you're inferring is that our role in communicating and connecting with parents now has to expand significantly. It has to go way beyond the weekly or the fortnightly newsletter, the every 2 week newsletter, that was the, you know, the old school approach to connecting with parents. Today, you know, we do have a responsibility to educate parents about the changes in the world around them. But as you said, more importantly, the implications that has for what happens in school and how that impacts on their sons or daughters. And so, as you said, we can't take for granted simply an awareness of what's happening, because some people have that awareness and just double down on existing practice. Oh, well, you know, I work for Google, but, you know, it got me a good job and, you know, I went through a traditional legacy school system. So therefore, that's what my son or daughter should have. We do have to sit them down and go, hang on, just let's think that through for a second. You know, okay, you know what's happening in the contemporary workplace. You know what the realities of the modern working environment are. Realistically, you're saying you just double down on traditional learning environment to create the right opportunities for your kids? I don't think so. And so what's happened is there's a lack of that discussion and conversation.
And I also think what's happened is, however, is that our bar for change is really low.
Yeah.
Because I think at the end of the day, we're scared that parents are going to come in and say, you know, wait a minute, don't do that. Don't change things up to the extent where it doesn't feel comfortable any longer, you know, or where it doesn't replicate my experience. You can change things at the edges. You can give them a Chromebook. You can, you know, pass out some, we can go in the parent portal, right, and do that kind of stuff. But what's this idea that my kid's coming home and telling me that he's researching, you know, XYZ because he's interested in it, not because it's in the curriculum? That's a little bit too much. And, you know, you would hope that that wouldn't be the case, but I really think it is. I think that parents want change as long as it's not too much change. And so the task again becomes to make the case that just a little change isn't really going to help, because as many Chromebooks, as many, you know, Remind installations there are, as many, you know, all this other stuff that we use, portals, whatever else, how much of that really changes anything when it comes to learning? I mean, I posted that today in my blog for the first time. I wrote in my blog today, Bruce. I don't know if you noticed.
Hey, how about that?
First time in like over a month.
Man's back on deck.
And it was this, no, but it was this, this press release that came out, they'd done a study and everybody now thinks that Google is just it, you know, it's the it girl now. Right. And basically Chromebooks are great and Google Classroom is great. And the one thing they never talk about in any of this stuff is learning. It's because of student achievement. It's because it's easier to teach. It's because it's all that stuff. It doesn't change anything. And we talked about that before too. And so that's a piece of it, right? In terms of, we have to help parents understand, first of all, a whole different vision of learning. Yeah. And I think, again, these stories contextually are really important. The one in the New York Times today, you know, was talking about, or a couple of days ago, portfolios of work are becoming more important than resumes, or that expect more emphasis on certificates or badges instead of diplomas. I mean, that kind of stuff is what I think, if you can sustain a conversation about that and you can do it in an intellectual way where, you know, people really are willing to kind of roll up their sleeves and get into that stuff, that's compelling change. And that's goes beyond Chromebooks. And so that's where it gets really, again, it gets difficult.
And it's the irony, and in some ways it's a paradox of what we've witnessed, because so many people, and for us at various times, put so much faith in technology in itself to bring about the substantive change. And at the same level also, people thought that this sort of avalanche of move to online learning in the higher ed space with MOOCs and whatever else was going to change the world. And what's happening is it wasn't that both those things are going to have a massive impact on what we do and on learning, but probably not much in the way that they have today, because right. people were distracted by the technology, as you've said several times. I mean, you know, Chromebooks and whatever else, just all they did was really endorsed existing practice. People simply, you know, despite their best intentions and despite what they said, use them to essentially become more efficient, not more effective.
As because they said. Fit in, they fit into the current structure.
That's right. They fit in absolutely. And as we both have said many times, you know, to the extent to which Papert predicted 20 or 30 years ago that they would. But in the same way, referring to the Times article you just mentioned, you know, people want to be aware that just because, you know, the first generation of online learning in higher ed, and I prefer to say online learning rather than MOOCs, because I think we both know that the original sort of genius of MOOCs didn't look much like what we saw in edX and wherever else. But this second generation, which is more about micro-credentialing and about badging and about, you know, basically courses on demand when you need them, rather than having to put yourself away for 4 or 6 years to come out with a diploma or a degree that supposedly prepares you for the rest of your life, is past us. It's well and truly finished. And it doesn't mean that there are some disciplines still and that will go on and continue to need long-term sustained study and focus. But it does mean that for a large number of kids, what they do post-secondary, post-K-12, could be a very different experience to what they're currently doing. And you've made mention of the example with Ernst & Young and PCW.
I think one of the things, and the MOOC thing is kind of interesting because obviously, as we know, when they first started, they really weren't the Udacity, Coursera type of MOOCs. But I do think now you're right that the credentialing piece, you know, when you have a gap between how much it costs to go to college and how cheap information is now, you know that people are going to innovate in that gap. And then that's what we're seeing right now. And the first iterations were pretty much of an abysmal failure because people were trying to make a lot of money off of them. And you know, now I think what you're seeing is that there are more and more people who are saying, I need specific skills. Employers saying, I need you to have specific skills. I don't need you to have a diploma that shows very little about what you can do. I need you to show me that you can do this. It's competency based almost.
Yep.
And that's where I think those badges and certifications and micro credentials and all that stuff are going to play a big role. I think that's definitely coming. And I think you're going to see more and more people who are going to cobble together, a living based on a number of different skill sets that change over time because they are constantly learning and they're constantly adapting to whatever new skill sets are needed and all those types of things. So much more flexible, much more fluid, much more agile, all of that kind of stuff is definitely coming.
Yeah, and to reinforce that, as I just referred to earlier and that you'd referred to on a previous occasion, you know, let's look at the two of the largest consulting accounting companies in the world, PCW and Ernst & Young, who've literally come out and said, you no longer are required to have a post K-12 degree, a graduate to go and work at those companies.
Right.
These aren't your local factory. It's not your local retail. Right. You know, these are at the top of the line. And what are they asking for? Well, they're going back to you can call it whatever you like, internship, apprenticeship. It's actually a professional apprenticeship. Call it whatever you like. And it doesn't mean, oh, no, we're not going to have you do any course, but they're going to do what you said. They're going to be going and working, you know, with mentors alongside experts in the field. But at various times, they'll go off and do online courses, short courses, intense courses. They might do they'll take up a lot of their own learning as and when they need it through the course of their early work with these companies. And PCW and Ernst & Young, just two examples, believe that they'll prepare them for a career in their companies better than if they have a graduate degree.
And let me just say again too, because I worry a little bit that the emphasis on all this is in the context of work, right? And yep. we're talking about a lot more than just work here. We're Absolutely. Talking about just being a good human, being a good global citizen, problem solving with others around things that don't make any money, you know, necessarily, but that yeah. are just, it's just good work in the world, and having the dispositions to collaborate, to contribute, all those types of things that I don't think are an emphasis in K through 12 schooling very much. Nowhere in the parent portal, right? Again, when you go in and see how your kid's doing and all that stuff. You know, he's got the B in calculus, but you don't really know what that means. It's a much larger shift. And I just do want to bring it back around to this idea though. So that conversation that lasts like 5 or 7 minute conversation that we had, I don't know how many parents that I know of, and we know quite a few. I mean, you know, we see my kids' friends' parents all the time. I don't know how many of them fully understand what we just talked about or fully considered it or heard of it. And I'm almost certain that if they have, they don't see how that plays itself out in terms of changes in practice. So I guess the question comes back to, so how do we help with that? I mean, let's get specific for a second, right? Let's talk about some specific ways that we can begin to help parents and teachers and students even, because we have to build students' context for change as well. How do we do that? You mentioned some things before in terms of having book studies and talking about articles and watching movies. But are there other ways that we can begin to change that conversation and educate people so that they can have that conversation at a higher level?
Well, it's interesting. You use that phrase, educate people. So all of a sudden you've taken for granted now that you're sharing our belief that is our role now, that leaders in schools have a role to educate people, not just kids. And I think you're right. I think that it isn't an adjunct role. It isn't an afterthought. It isn't something you do for half an hour at the end of the week. I think there now is a much bigger responsibility on school leaders to, as you said, reach out to the whole community. And that includes, yes, it includes the kids. And we probably spend a bit of time talking with our kids about this. It definitely includes parents, but it also includes the wider community, because the wider community is in some ways the most poorly informed, at least parents, certainly when kids are at certain grades within their schools, and it's usually the beginning and the end of their schooling, K-12, parents are at least committed to being, to have some level of understanding of what's going on, but the wider community doesn't have that. And so I think what we've got in front of us is an extraordinary range of mediums and media that we can Right. use that can help us connect to that wider community, as in addition to the immediate community surrounding our school. And it is contingent upon us to actually make use of that, to think very, to use a quote from our colleague Missy, to be very intentional Right. about what we're trying to do, and what is the message we're trying to take out there? What is the new story that we're trying to share, and how can we do that in a way that will significantly inform people in, you know, about the real depth of change that's happening in the world around them, and as you said from the outset, what that means for school. What does that mean for the experiences for their kids?
And it requires a couple of things. Number one, it requires that we've taken the time to craft a modern vision.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? And when we are intentional, that's the story that we're telling. It is that vision of teaching and learning in classrooms and understanding why we do that. But then I do think it's a mix of social media. It's a mix of technology. It's a mix of face-to-face. It's a a constant checking in to see what story people are hearing. I don't think that we do that enough in schools either. I have personal experience with a school district that I'm sure has no idea the stories that are being told about it because it doesn't tell a story on its own. And so, the story that the people get is from the kids, from sitting at the coffee shop, from, whatever else. But there's no direct kind of interaction in terms of what the vision is and what the belief system is in terms of learning. So it does really require that we know what story we want to tell. And then, like you said, being really intentional about it. And you and I like to, or at least I like to, the term kind of that slow drip method where we're constantly getting in front of people, whether that's video, magazines, emails, Twitter accounts, whatever else, so that there's this drip of change that they're seeing contextually so that they understand when they see it in practice.
Okay. So we agree on that. And the first comment that you'll often get from people, and our friend Peter Senge in Dance of Change talks about the first comment that people give back, well, I don't have the time. That's not part of my brief. I'm running a school here and I can find time to produce a newsletter once a week, but that's as far as I go. How do we respond to that?
Well, I think there's a moral imperative at this point to find the time. I always use the example, when we were getting ready to have our second kid, we were looking at each other kind of going, how are we going to do this? We just don't have, we're already so swamped and our plates are so, but you know what? You find the time because it matters, because you care about it. And I think that, we can use that time excuse very easily, but once we start stacking up and looking at how we're spending our time, I think that there's a case to be made that this is more important. That if we're not functioning in a culture that is knowledgeable about how the world acts today, how the world is changing today, what the future may hold for our kids in a lot of different ways, we're not serving our kids, plain and simple. So, I just think that I get that time, and I get that policymakers, and I get that legacy systems, and I get the tradition, all of that plays a role in making this really hard. But as our Canadian colleague who's in Change School right now keeps saying, it takes courage and commitment to do this work. And I think that that's where that has to come from. You have to have the courage to do it.
Yeah. And I think also back to your point earlier that I think too often, we are focused on the here and now, what I got to do today, what I got to do this week. And so, this week it might look like you got a very busy week. And so your short-term response is, how am I going to find the time? But how about the long-term outlook? What's your intent? You're trying to build support for change within your school. And you want parents to be that voice for change. You want parents to not be asking and challenging every move you're making and questioning why school doesn't look like the school that they knew. And if you take the time, as you said, slow drip, you take the time to help parents over time better understand the modern context in which school's now situated, in which their kids are going to be living and learning, then over time, the parents become your voice for change. So rather than taking more time from you, they're actually giving you time, because in the long game, they become your advocates for something that you're trying to achieve.
Well, there is definitely a need for change. I think that is a pretty compelling case. And I definitely think there is a compelling story and vision that we need to tell these days. And we all know that the best storytellers for any district are the kids. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many beautiful videos you make or how many great newsletters you send out or how many drips are in your intentional drip strategy. If the kids are coming home bored, disengaged, not understanding why they're doing what they're doing, seeing no real purpose or relevance in getting up every morning, it's not going to make much of a difference. And so vision has to meet with practice, and practice that engages kids and is really learner and learning centered, as if it would be anything else, but is really focused on that, I think is the best way to tell the story without a question. But still, if that's going to be a different narrative from what has been done in the past, and in many cases still is currently being done, then parents are going to have to be okay with kids coming home telling something different about their experience in a hopefully a more positive way.
And just to finish off, you know, our discussion, Will, this needs to start today. You know, this isn't something we can put off. I mean, there is an urgent need for this wider conversation to help people be more aware, be better educated around these things. So I know we'll post the links to those articles that we've made reference to in this discussion alongside with the podcast, so that hopefully those people listening, you're able to take the initiative and share those articles with your community and start to build the discussion in the ways that we've been talking about.
And a couple other things you can do today is check us out at Modern Learners, and the Modern Learners newsletter, as we've mentioned before, is full of links every week that we hope will engage in these conversations and get you thinking a little bit more about these different types of contexts. And change.school, that's the web address. That's where we are bringing together leaders from around the world who are interested in figuring out how to make relevant, sustainable change happen in their schools and districts. And our second cohort begins in June and our third cohort in mid-September. So if you're interested in that work, please check us out. Again, the address is change.school. And Bruce, let's do this a little bit sooner rather than later again, yeah. Okay?
Enjoyed it, man.
All right, mate. You take care, and we will see you later. Thanks for listening.
Cheers, man.